Hi everyone, I'm Gary Knoll. Been on the air a long time, sharing positive insights every single day. Today, you're going to learn about how transcendental meditation reduces emotional stress and improves academics. Center for Wellness and Achievement in Education at Stanford University. That's just one of many studies that you haven't heard about. We find these by searching the scientific literature, always the peer-reviewed literature. For example, University of Health Sciences in Turkey has a really good study on vitamin D deficiency and autoimmunity, even chronic hives. Yeah, who knew? You will. And how higher levels of omega-3 fatty acids in your blood increases your life expectancy by almost 5 years. Where's that written? In the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition, the current issue. And this was a long-term study, part of the Framingham Offspring Cohort, started in 1971, done at the Hospital Del Mar Medical Research Institute. So these are just some of the insights we'll be sharing today. But also today is going to be our talk back, where you have an opportunity to call in and share your points of view on the issues that we will be highlighting. For example, I'll be talking about, will cash soon be obsolete? From the American Institute of Economic Research, they say yes. I say I hope not. Why not? We'll express that. Also today, Freedom of Information Act found that 5,522 people have died within 28 days of receiving COVID vaccine in Scotland. Scotland's a beautiful country. I've been there many times. Wonderful people. Small population, and this was the AstraZeneca vaccine. The Pfizer vaccine also was responsible for 1,877 deaths. So when you look at a small country, small population, and 5,522 people dead, tens of thousands injured, now add that on to the deaths in Great Britain, which are now 20,000 dead, in the United States, it's around 11,000 dead. The FDA tried to play a game with the CDC by reducing the number by half. They won't get away with that. So you're looking at tens of thousands dead, millions injured, and yet not a word of criticism, not one word in the New York Times or the Washington Post or CNN. Why not? We'll talk about that. Also, China's had the heaviest rain in 1,000 years. And yet nothing is being done to prevent this. It's actually increasing all of its efforts to grow its economy, which means manufacturing, which means more carbon dioxide, which means more flooding. We're also going to talk about, isn't it time to celebrate, not denigrate, ivermectin? This is a commentary. I'll be sharing that today. And Johns Hopkins University found zero COVID deaths, not one death, among healthy kids. And they looked at 48,000 children. They found zero COVID deaths among healthy kids. But the CDC doesn't seem to care. Shouldn't we care? Since when do we allow such corrupt organizations, read the article on the FDA's corruption, the CDC's corruption, World Health Organization corruption, Pfizer's corruptions, Merck's corruptions. Yeah, we went after all these people in not just some rant, but rather methodical, measured, objective review. And it shows none of these organizations should be trusted. Then why are we trusting them with our children's lives? We know that the vaccine has substantial side effects. Shouldn't that be of concern to us? It should be, but it's not. So those are just some of the things that we're going to talk about. Oh, by the way, since we seem to have a whole mantra of destroy the truth tellers and the media is complicit, activists are complicit, then why are you supporting Johnson & Johnson's COVID vaccine when they just agreed to pay $26 billion to settle their manufacturing of the opiates that were the cause of tens of thousands of deaths each year? In fact, one of the One of the statistics that's startling is that more people are dying now, this year, last year, the year before, from opiates than ever before in history. We're talking about nearly 100,000 per year. That's a lot of people dying. And yet the people making the drugs, the doctors prescribing the drugs, the pharmacies distributing the drugs, like OxyContin, they're held harmless. Why aren't we asking why are these people using these drugs to begin with? What's wrong in their life that we, as a civilized society, as a compassionate society, as a caring society, as a spiritual society, should get in there and go to the cause? Friend, how can we help you so you don't end up risking your life using methamphetamine or cocaine or crack? That's what we should be doing. We shouldn't have a war on drugs and putting people in prison. Just my thoughts. More on that later, but I'm interested in your thoughts. So why should we trust a group, praise a group, and protect a group like Johnson & Johnson when they've been engaged in systematic destruction of people's lives and lying and bad drugs, talcum powder, for decades? Isn't that the irony? The worse you can do, the more you're privileged in our society and given special preferential treatment. But today, I'm also going to be playing some video clips, and I think you'll find them of interest. And including in those clips will be 31 seconds when one of the leading health officials in the official government agencies of Great Britain has something to say about vaccines. Bill Maher, the new rule, equality of outcomes. Eric Clapton, exclusive and uncensored about his almost dying from his vaccines. David Cross, why America sucks at everything. I would disagree with that, but I don't have people on just because I agree. I like to hear other people's thoughts so we can open up a discussion, a dialogue, a debate in a civil manner. We begin with health, however, and students who participated in meditation-based quiet time programs utilizing the Transcendental Meditation Technique for 4 months had significantly improved in overall emotional stress symptoms, quality of sleep, and English language arts, academic achievement, according to a new randomized controlled trial published in the peer-reviewed journal Education. I remember the brother of a close friend of mine was the personal assistant, the person who kind of did everything for Shreve Chinmoy. Very nice guy. And because they were into a vegan, vegetarian diet and exercise, and Shreve was really an athlete. I mean, he was remarkable. I was introduced, and they wanted to know about what kind of protocol. So I gave him a whole series of protocols. But that's where I heard, have you gotten anything on Transcendental Meditation? I said, well, only what I've heard, but I haven't done any work on it, research. He said, well, do so, because sooner or later, people will wake up to how some other cultures around the world have learned how to calm themselves, even in crisis, how to go through a day without being upset about everything. How about looking at the world without personalizing yourself as being the center of the universe? Boy, was he correct. Today, everyone can benefit from Transcendental Meditation. I even remember a young person coming up to me, called my office all the time, and my producer, Adria Eisenmeyer, who was my producer for about 12 years till she moved, great producer, by the way. All of you who used to come up to the retreats, we would do it at Grossinger's and Concord and Homowack and the Granite and Neville and all those other places, the Catskills. She was the one that organized all that. And she selected really good guests for the show, and a voracious reader. We didn't believe in bringing anyone on the radio program unless she or I read their books, understand what their message was, because as an author myself, and having produced and hosted a weekly radio program called Writers Forum for 5 years from 1967 to 1972, I had the leading intellects in America on. And you know when someone's read your material and understands what you're saying based upon the questions they ask. And so that's where I got in the process of never invite someone on the show till I'm really familiar with their work. And so anyhow, this person who I had not heard of before, didn't know anything about, wanted to come to one of the retreats and give a lecture. So I said, okay, give him an opportunity, because he taught transcendental meditation. He was an advocate of it, and he was also a medical doctor. Good. And I sat in the audience after dinner, and we had a lot of heavyweights on that week. Linus Pauling was there. Jeffrey Bland was there. Robert Mendelson, one of the great, great medical doctors and outspoken critics of bad medicine, was there. So he gave a talk, and it was a good talk. And he was a big believer that we didn't need all to be stressed out about everything. We had to look at ourselves in context of the larger world we live in, the community we live in, the choices we make, and what are the outcomes. I thought it was inspirational and well done. And afterwards I said, keep sharing this message. And he just smiled and said, I'm going to share this the rest of my life. That person was Deepak Chopra. Yeah. Interesting little tidbit from history. That goes back a long time, 50 years ago. In any case, meditation we all can benefit from. The next study comes from the University of Health Sciences. We know that we should be taking more of most nutrients like vitamin C and bioflavonoids and quercetin, coenzyme Q10, magnesium, calcium, zinc, selenium, then vitamin E also in there and tocotrienols, than what we normally do. But there's a basic understanding to this, and it is, what is the likelihood that someone will be conscious about the nutrients they should take in if at the same time they're completely unconscious or not concerning the outcome of the food and they eat and the food that they consume, beverages they drink, the lack of exercise, etc.? So what is the likelihood if you're not living a healthy life by 90% of the choices that you would be that 10% conscious and take your supplements every day? And especially if you're taking multiple supplements. Oh, that's too much of a hassle. So it's easy to understand why the people who are taking their vitamin D, especially now with COVID, and are taking their vitamin C and zinc every day and are taking it at doses that would make a difference, that we would also have a group of people who have taken no consideration for anything involving health. In fact, almost with defiance, and I can tell you that from personal experience, my entire family, all my aunts and uncles, brothers, parents, not one of them was into a healthy choice. In fact, I think it was kind of an unwritten rule in my family that if you did anything healthy, you were suspect of something. And they would smoke 2, 3, 4 pack cigarettes a day, drink, 5, 6 cups of coffee, drink alcohol, not exercise, lay on a couch after a meal that was way too much of all the wrong foods, and kind of go into a resting coma and just drooling at the mouth for the next 2 hours. That was normal where I grew up. So needless to say, everyone was deficient in everything, including, unfortunately, common sense. So today we have a nation bereft with diabetes, obesity, cancers, heart disease, high blood pressure, dementia. These are not genetic. These are intentional. So why? Why would a person use a fork and a knife to kill themselves when they could use that same fork and knife to heal themselves? Question for you. So this study simply shows that if you are not getting enough vitamin D, then you're going to suffer more likely from autoimmune conditions. And we have millions of autoimmune conditions. On the other hand, if you take a lot of omega-3 fatty acids, you increase your blood with fatty acids, let's just say for argument's sake, between 2,000 to 3,000 milligrams a day, half in the morning, half in the afternoon, then you could add 5 years onto your lifespan. Now, we're not talking about exercising. That will do it. A better sleep, that will do it. Not smoking or drinking, that will certainly do it. Not being overweight or having a high body mass index, that also will do it. Not being chronically stressed, that will do it. Not being involved with environmental pollution, that will do it. Not working night shifts, which can take up to 10 years off your life, That will do it. Not being around electromagnetic pulses like cell phones and computers and antenna, etc. That will do it. Not being in a bad relationship, that will surely kill you quickly. But if you do the opposite and you're adding 5 years on from just the omega-3 fatty acids, then how much will you add onto your life with vitamin C at high doses and doing all the other things positively? Well, you could add 30, 40 years onto your life. And that's why I say, right now, as we speak, there are people in this audience who, starting 10, 20, 30, 40 years ago, even longer, one woman I just counseled the other morning, and by the way, when I call those of you who are terminally ill, who've asked for help, understand that I've got a packed day every day. And so I set time aside at night after 10 o'clock and in the morning at 4 o'clock to call people. That's when you're going to get your call. So don't be surprised if I wake you up, and because that's the time I'm giving you, and it's free, and it can save your life. It's because some people say, what are you calling for? Call me back later. I said, with my schedule, that's not going to happen. Wake up now, get some water, and I'll give you what you need. Sometimes they say okay, and other times they don't. But I called 94-year-old woman, outstanding health, because she's been listening to the program, she said, for 50 years and following the advice. And she says all of her indices for blood pressure and blood sugar and still maintaining her muscle mass and exercising, they're all there. She's terrific. But she moved and was outside, and she got bit by a tick, got Lyme's disease, and boy, that threw her system out. So, okay, now she has a good protocol. She's under holistic medical treatment because there's some therapy she's going to need, like intravenous vitamin drips, that will help her get by this. Yes, you can overcome Lyme's disease. Yes, you can overcome chronic fatigue syndrome also. But understand the reason she is alive today, and she acknowledges this, is because she follows the advice. She doesn't listen to it. She actualizes it. And that's what we have to do. And then there are other people who are 70 and look 40. I've seen them. I've seen a woman who is 77 who looks 50. So we can make the new 60-40, the new 70-45. That's entirely doable. And we've proven it with the actual clinical studies. It's not theory. We have blood chemistry workups. We have anti-aging analysis by outside experts. In fact, two of the leading anti-aging medical doctor scientists in the world had input on the protocols, the exercise protocols, and all the different protocols they must go through. I had to create the protocols, the nutrition protocols, which everyone was following, and they all had to do the same thing, taking the same meals, same juices, same exercise, same stress management every day. The only one I haven't done is just the mind. I want to show how powerful the mind is. I want to show what you can do when you unleash the enormous healing capacity of your consciousness. But most people aren't even aware of consciousness. So that's our next altogether, the whole program coming up the last 2 weeks of September. Consciousness. Helping people understand why they become depressed, why they become anxious, why they become fearful, insecure, make the wrong decisions, wrong relationships, wrong job, wrong place, and how to turn all that around no matter what age they are in life. Never will forget, I was sitting, this goes back 20 years, I was sitting at my desk where I had my office for 27 years over at 83rd and Broadway. It was kind of funny because at nighttime, around midnight, 1 o'clock, I'd hear, "Hey, Gary," and I'd look out the window. It was just one step up or one floor up, and someone would be in a car, says, "Don't you go to sleep?" I said, "Yeah, when I'm tired," and they'd laugh. And I remember that I was sitting there, and there was all these letters, and I'd like to respect the audience reading their letters, and there was a little postcard, wasn't even a letter, and on it a person just was saying goodbye, but he didn't say he's going to kill himself. He just said that he's been listening to the show for a long time, and since the passing of his wife, he just doesn't have the same reason to be alive. That was it. So I thought, well, that's not good. And so I look at the return address, and I went up there. It was up in the Bronx. And it was a little house, really run down, not kept up. I knocked on the door, and this older gentleman came. He was in his 90s, and he was surprised to see me. And I said, I got your note here, and I think that it would benefit you if we just sat down and had a little talk. Okay. And then he just talked about how when you have someone in your life, as he did for 60-plus years, and you were in perfect harmony with this sacred being that you loved, treasured, they die. What do you do? What do you look forward to when you wake up in the morning? You're stuck in the memory of all the wonderful and exceptional moments you share. Same way with anyone else. Think of the friends that you've lost, family members you've lost, the pets you've lost. We care a lot about our pets because they're there unconditionally to love and be with us. So I said, well, let's just take a look. What if I told you that there's still another chapter to your life? And I said, what do you like to do? He said, well, we used to love to go dancing and playing the piano and singing together. I said, okay. I said, do you know how many kids are in this neighborhood? I walked from the subway, and I saw all these kids. Wouldn't it be nice if you put a little notice out locally in the schools or on bulletin boards that you're willing to teach children how to play that piano? Yeah, I had never thought of that. I said, wouldn't that be a gift to them? They're starting their life. You've had a wonderful life. Why not leave the legacy of pass it forward? I could do that. And I said, and I noticed that there was a dance studio down there. I think it was an Arthur Murray or Fred Astaire, one of those old studios. And there's a lot of older people in this neighborhood who, women who are single, and they would love someone to dance with and socialize. Why don't you say that you're available? If you're a good dancer and you're in good health, why not? Well, that's exactly what he did over the next year. And by the way, he took, when I went up again, he was carrying a piece of plywood, which is 4 by 8 foot and heavy, and he was bringing it in there because he had completely rehabbed his whole house. Didn't look the same outside or inside, and that was an important mission to him. And he had flowers planted outside. And then I filmed him dancing in the studio with a woman, and she was just as happy as can be. And then I filmed him teaching some children how to play the piano. The takeaway message is that we always can have another start over. It won't be the same start over that we had at the start, but it'll give us a different outcome. And since we're all going to have the same outcome, all, but it doesn't have to be in the same way, and it can be with joy and happiness to start a new section to our life, revitalize our creativity and our thinking and our capacity and sharing and giving. And I've seen it firsthand. That was just one example. And by the way, if you want to see that guy, he's in Age Is Only a Number, played on PBS stations all across the country. And he was not alone. There was a whole group. I put the word out on the air. I remember I said, any senior citizens in this audience who are kind of at a dead end with their life, they're just waiting to die, they're just occupying their time, but they're meaningless time, ritualized time, but not exciting, not creative, not innovative time. And I didn't know how many I'd get, 5, 10 people, got 700. So many people had to do the lecture at Robert F. Kennedy Junior High School over on the east side. And we then followed some of these people for the next year, filming them. They're in that film also. Some people who had never raced in their life did the marathon that year from scratch, started new careers. So you're never too old to have another vital day. But if you think you're too old, you'll never have another vital day. It's all about perception. That's why this upcoming retreat is so important, this Hantation group, because we've got to learn that the engine that controls this body is our consciousness. The brain is only the mechanism by which it works. So we can reprogram that and watch the difference. One last thing on health and healing, and that is from Children's Hospital Orange County, and published an article in Scientific Reports, COVID-19, the patients with malnutrition may be more likely to have severe outcomes. Well, of course, that's just common sense. You don't need a study for that. With malnutrition, you're going to have a worse outcome for cancer, heart disease, arthritis, depression, everything. So let's pay attention to getting ourselves so we don't have malnutrition. And one last thing from University of Zurich, the most comprehensive study ever done on the experience of pure awareness during meditation. What do I mean? In the context of meditation practice, meditators can experience what is known as pure awareness or pure consciousness, in which they perceive consciousness itself. This state can be experienced in various ways, but evidently incorporates specific sensations as well as non-specific accompanying perceptions and feelings and thoughts. It's as if you are part of everything, but aware of everything simultaneously, meaning you see everything individually, but then you see it collectively. You understand it. It's like you understand life without trying to figure it out. That gestalt. That's important. That's pure consciousness. And that's what we should use when we're working, when we're problem solving, when we're trying to relate, when we're trying to hear what someone is saying without putting up a defense mechanism and just being antagonistic and pushing back harder. That doesn't get us anywhere. Just something to think about, why it's important we go to that next frontier, use those senses we haven't used. We are 27 minutes, almost halfway through our program. But now we're going to take a break and come back. And when we come back, we're going to go to a clip. And this particular clip is only 31 seconds long. So we have the official version of things, and then we have the truth of things. This is from a leading member of England's Vaccine Policy Group. Listen to what he has to say.
And that's not surprising because the vaccines are not 100% effective. They're very, very effective, but not 100%. So the answer is that we should expect to see a higher proportion of people in hospital and catching the infection who are double vaccinated. That is inevitable that we will see that because of the less than 100% efficacy of the vaccines overall.
Okay, listen to what he said and compare that to what we were told. 95% effective. And in the average person's mind, effective means I will not contract, nor will I give to other people the virus. Then we start seeing all these people who are vaccinated, double vaccinated, now coming down with the COVID, but also coming down with worse symptoms, 600% worse than people who were never vaccinated. They're also shedding it, spreading it to other people in their family, asymptomatic spread. That's why all those people who came up, the Democrats coming up to Washington from Texas in that private jet, they had all been fully vaccinated. None had symptoms, yet high degree got COVID, or at least showed positive for COVID. So isn't it time that we realized to go back and correct the first talking points? You were wrong. Anthony Fauci, CDC, World Health Organization, all the people were wrong. New York Times, your headline, you were wrong. Oh, and by the way, COVID's only 36% effective in Haiti. So you see all misinformation, unfortunately. So now people are thinking, well, we've got to get the COVID vaccine in order to work and go to school, to go in places, and there are those advocating punishment for those who don't vaccinate, as if anyone who doesn't vaccinate is doing so out of some political or ideological frame of mind. To the contrary, MIT, Massachusetts Technology, just completed a study showing those who did not choose at this time to vaccinate were not anti-vaxxers. They were just doing more homework or more scholarly in their homework to see what were the consequences. For example, when you got your vaccines, when millions got their vaccines, you just went in, got your vaccine, and left. Were you given a sheet of paper showing you Guillain-Barré and all the other conditions you could get? No, you were not. Was that required? Yes, it was required. Did you get the package insert from Pfizer or Moderna showing you that this was not meant, this vaccine was not meant or had not been studied to prevent infection? No, you did not receive that. You didn't read that. It is just an applied propaganda piece. Oh, get the vaccine and don't get infected. So you see misinformation from top down. That's just in Great Britain. And, oh, yes, it's very effective. 60% got infected. Wow. After vaccination, after both vaccines. Now they're going to suggest booster shots on top of this, and booster shots are not going to have much of an immune response. So then what are you going to set up? Multiple booster shots? That's what they're going to do. You got to see where this is going. Now we're going to hear from Eric Clapton. I thought you would find this important, his experiences with getting the vaccine.
About the possibility of focus protection, which was different to herd, because I think when they first talked about herd immunity and they added on, I think it was Boris's early press conference, then we may lose some loved ones. And I think that, woof, that's where it all fell through. And I think people, I think it wasn't more than 24 hours before they did the U-turn, because I think the public response must have been massive. But nevertheless, that's what I believe we were capable of as a society, and that's what we've always done. So I followed that path and until they disappeared. And then I thought, well, who do I? I've got this. It's all intuitive for me. I don't really know what else to go on. I'm not really a scholar. I don't know anything about sociology, science. I'm a musician. So, but I did realize that I was setting out to do a world tour. I had to cancel a year's work immediately because there was no leaving it to the last minute. Tickets were about to be sold, which from a selfish point of view, is devastating because I'm of an age now where I don't know how long my faculties will go on. So I was really looking at it from selfishly to begin with. Then I realized actually there's a spiritual point to this, is that we heal, you know, proper old school people. We don't lip sync, we play, and we play for that crowd. And there's something that happens when you put a great musician or someone who knows what they're doing in front of people who need support or just to have pleasure or joy. And we figure out what it is and we give it to them and people leave and renewed. And I need that too. So I was really devastated. Then I heard that I got word from a friend that he was trying to do live gigs and he was outwardly, speaking against the government policies and everything. And I think a lot of things happened in between. We had the summer and I went away and I thought quite strongly about taking my family away from England. We'd go and live somewhere else and start somewhere else. My wife is American and we could go there, but the rhetoric there was even worse in some respect because it was all tied in with Trump. And the minute I began to say anything about the lockdown here, and my concerns, I was labeled as a Trump supporter in America, and I got some pretty heavy feedback. When it came to the beginning of this year, and the Barrington guys were talking about the vaccine as being the deal breaker, and I thought, okay, I have a terrible fear of needles. I hate needles. I don't want to be, and I don't even like blood samples, anything like that. But I believed them. I followed that path. And when they started to talk about rolling out the vaccine, I smelled a rat again. Just the way the focus was on this, and there was a race, and then it became political and national. And I thought, here we go again. It's the same old shit. But I was diagnosed with emphysema a couple of years ago, and I thought, well, I fit that bracket. That's pretty vulnerable. I mean, I'm 76, and if there is such a thing as this, and we didn't know anybody, you know, where I lived, there was nobody that we could, even friends of friends of friends were. It was thin on the ground. I thought, well, I ought to have this vaccination for my kids, you know, just to, so that I don't want to drop dead on them, or I don't want them to lose me. I don't want to lose them. All these the normal natural responses, I think. And then so I went and I got the notification, you can come and get. And I was holding out for AstraZeneca because it came from Oxford. And so, you know, and I'm pretty naive about this stuff. And I thought, well, that's, and also I'd heard that it was old school method of inoculation. And I went and had the jab, and I got a little green, like a library card. And I thought, well, that's what I'm going to show the people when I get on the plane. there's a lot of funny stuff about it. And within a, within several hours, I was shaking like a leaf, and I went to bed early, and I couldn't get warm, and I did, and I thought, am I running a fever? I was boiling hot and sweating, and then I was cold, and I was out for the count for about a week, and I had been preparing for a project where I was going to be playing acoustic guitar with a couple of musicians, and we were going to film it. That week knocked me out. And I had to start again from scratch, and I was okay, but it wasn't, it didn't come off as well as I would like to. Because I would professionally, it was a huge setback, and it frightened the shit out of me because I didn't know how long it would last. I then started to find out more, and it was about that time that I ran into somebody. So I said, well, here's my number. We swapped numbers. He was on Telegram. So I contacted him, and he told me about a channel where I could find lots of information and a lot of support. And so I logged on to that. There's a chap called Robin Minotti who runs a channel, and it's for anybody that's concerned or is looking for, in my case, looking for support. For me, I'd felt so alone up until that point. I really couldn't talk to my family and my kids. My teenagers were, it seemed like they'd been brainwashed. And there was a lot of that kind of going on from other protests that were happening earlier. They were really, it was the first time I'd seen my kids passionate about anything. And I thought it was great. But I was being ostracized, and I could feel that everywhere. I could feel alienation because I held a different view. So I was trying to keep my mouth shut, but I did. I was following the channel avidly, and bit by bit, I realized that I probably shouldn't have had the first jab. But then I was offered the second, and I thought, well, what have I got? What's the point in, you know, stopping now? So I went and had the second, and that, and then it got really bad. And I, within about a week, I had lost, my hands didn't really work. They were, I suffered from a condition already called peripheral neuropathy, which is nerve damage pain, really, which means that, you know, I can get numb or pins and needles. When I had the second jab, that was, it's, and they do say that condition, by the way, is progressive and it's incurable. So I had expected it to be, it's manageable. I expected it to be something that would gradually grow worse as I got older into my 80s or whatever. But always, you know, I could get some ice pack or whatever, it would be fine. This went ramped up from, on a scale of 10, say, from 3 to 8 or 9. Agony. And chronic pain is not, you know, it, when you know that nothing will work, there's no medication you can take that will help, is very, very frightening. And the worst thing is you don't know when it's going to wear off or when it's going to go away. So that was, you know, that was what frightened me the most medically, health-wise. And it still does because, you know, I have gigs to do, I have recording work to do, but I can't, I mean, to touch the guitar, to play the guitar is not fun. And it's something I do, you know, then when I put it down, it's there until I go to bed, and I take sleeping pills because I can't sleep because of the pain. And that's not, it's not a good way to live. But and it's not all due to the vaccine, but the vaccine took my immune system and just shook it around again. And that's still going on. So, and that's, then I read, you know, a lot of the evidence that I had been reading about with people that were having adverse reaction. That was on the list, was, you know, damage to the immune system.
Do you feel like you were made aware of those risks before?
That's Eric Clapton. And I'm playing that because I believe that his experience is so common. It doesn't matter how famous you are. He's one of the most famous guitarists and musicians in the world. But at the same time, he felt completely isolated. Underlying previous conditions, he felt were inoperable or medically irreversible, no treatment, it would be progressive. And by the way, he's wrong on that. In fact, I played a clip, and you could actually watch it, of a man who was a friend of mine for almost 45 years, Bill Thompson, who was in a wheelchair, couldn't walk, had to have a walker, couldn't walk 5 feet on a walker, feet wouldn't work, he had neuropathy, diabetic neuropathy, and 2 weeks later he was just walking without the walker and no pain. And so there are ways of helping people. Anyone who wants to send that message out to him, he should begin looking. First he could look there in England, go to Neil Jard. It's been a while since I've been to England, so I don't know if Neil Jard is there. It was there for several hundred years, where they had little medicinal and homeopathic stores and little organic market and health food store, et cetera. And the whole thing was about health, and that's in downtown London. But also there's some outstanding homeopaths that could work with him. But for the heavy-duty protocols, if anybody has him, all he has to do is just email, and I'll be happy to send those protocols over to him at prn@gmail.com, prnstudio@gmail.com. In any case, now you see that no matter how wealthy or successful or famous you are, when you get something wrong and you don't have any information to counteract that, then you feel terrified. And by the way, he was not alone. This is from the European Medicine Agency. This is their official report, Science, Medicine, Health. It's called Indra Vigilance. Quote, COVID vaccine adverse drug reactions, 18,928 dead. That's 18,928 dead and 1,823,219 injuries. And that's just through last Friday. Today, they'll give an update, and it'll probably go over 20 million dead and over 2 million injured. Since when do we ever anywhere in world history allow 20 million people to die in one area of the world, 27 countries, members of the European Union, and 2 million injured, and many of those injuries are permanent, and not suddenly say, let us stop now and examine what we know up to this point that we didn't know at the beginning and correct this? But none of that is being done, not even being considered. You could have a million dead and no one will say, that's unfortunate. Let's stop. Not when this amount of profit's being made and you have such puppets of propaganda like the New York Times and other people willing to defend inappropriate actions. Your thoughts. 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. And while you're thinking about what to say on this issue, or why people would not choose to use a knife and fork to heal themselves, but rather to kill themselves. What's that about from your perspective? Give us a call, 888-874-4888. And now we're going to go to a different clip. This I think you'll find interesting. And this is David Cross, Why America Sucks at Everything. I disagree, but I believe that we should hear what he has to say and then choose to agree or challenge him in part or whole.
America is the greatest country on earth, the strongest, the richest, the most powerful country on earth. As an American, I'm sure you've heard that roughly 135 times a year, 235 if you go to public school. 335 if you go to a Christian academy. We're told that Americans have the best lives of any people in the world, that we have low taxes, small government, and the highest living standards on earth, and most inaccurately, that we're the freest. Well, it is partly true. America is the richest country, not just in the world, but in the history of the world. It's really hard to comprehend just how rich we are. We have 18 million people who are millionaires. American households own about $100 trillion in wealth, an almost unthinkable amount of money. Okay, so America is the richest country ever. But there's a curious paradox. Most Americans actually have a much worse standard of living than people who live in poorer countries like Germany or Finland or Britain. But how can that be? That shouldn't make any sense. Well, here's the deal. Americans get significantly worse services because our tax dollars don't fund them. So, of course, our services are worse. And thus, we enjoy less happy lives than people who live in the aforementioned countries. Not that difficult a concept to conceive, really. You get what you pay for, said the cartoon dog to the other cartoon dog. And while you might think the reason American tax dollars don't fund as many services is because we pay lower taxes than other countries, that's not even true. When you add federal, state, local, and sales taxes and include other costs and services that our taxes don't cover but other countries' taxes do, like our uniquely high health insurance premiums, you'll find that Americans actually give away more of their wages than most of the developed world. For example, in Canada, for a married worker with two kids, all of the previously mentioned costs combined, from taxes to health insurance premiums, make up only 11% of the average wage. In the UK, it's just about 26%. Meanwhile, once you tack on the cost of our outlandish health insurance premiums, you're spending a whopping 43% of your paycheck. That's more than France, Finland, Sweden, and Norway. In real reality, Americans keep much less of what we own than in other countries. In other countries, their government takes a bit more tax, but then gives that money back to their citizens in the form of healthcare or job support, or a general safety net for all vulnerable citizens, no matter how dusky they are. So what do Americans get for the money we pay in? Well, sure, we get a crumbling infrastructure, shameful homelessness, and millions of hungry, neglected children, but we also get some of the worst services in the developed world. Again, our healthcare. American healthcare is simultaneously the most expensive, the least efficient, and the least effective healthcare system in the developed world. Hey, the devil's trifecta. And in exchange for this extremely expensive, inefficient healthcare system, what do we get? Well, we get some of the worst health outcomes in the developed world. We have fewer hospital beds per capita than people in Turkey or Brunei. Americans have a lower life expectancy than people in Lebanon or Cuba. And in the Mississippi Delta and much of Appalachia, life expectancy is lower than in Bangladesh. In fact, in 2017, the United Nations sent a commissioner to West Virginia to document what he saw, and he described, quote, third world conditions of absolute poverty, unquote. We even have a higher infant mortality rate than people in Russia and Serbia. In every single metric, America does worse across the board. So why is healthcare so expensive? Because it's so complicated. You have to look for in-network physicians, schedule an established care appointment, beg for coverage from your insurance company that couldn't care less about you, and that's if you're lucky enough to have good insurance. Compare that to Britain and all of those other evil, socialist-like countries where it's simple. Public hospitals provide free treatment to people who need it. That's it. I'll repeat that. Public hospitals provide free treatment to people who need it. And here's the best part. Even though Britain offers healthcare for free, their system is actually a lot cheaper to run than ours. Per capita healthcare spending in the U.S. is almost three times what it is in Britain, and almost five times what Canadians spend. In fact, Americans spend the most per person of any country in the world for healthcare. But the free market is more efficient, you screech. But in America, private systems often aren't efficient at all. Private drug companies have an incentive to charge whatever they can get away with for pharmaceuticals. In Canada, a carton of insulin costs about $20. In the U.S., it costs $300. And with private insurance companies footing the bill, hospitals have an incentive to get as much money out of patients as possible, too. In 2015, the average cost of an MRI scan in the U.S. was $1,119. But it was only $215 in Australia. Spain, about $181. And our healthcare system is so inefficient that we spend over a third of our cost on administration. The United States spends significantly more on administration than we spend on preventative or long-term healthcare. That's just not smart. Okay, we get it. We all know that American healthcare is so much more expensive, you say, but that's the cost of having the freest freedom in God's favorite country. Well, guess what? Medical procedures that are totally free in Britain, like giving birth, cost tens of thousands of dollars in the United States. I mean, you want to talk about the cost of freedom. Sadly, because of these high costs, Americans often avoid going to the doctor, something almost half the population say they do. With shoddy or non-existent health insurance, Americans will wait until their conditions force them into the emergency room where treatment is far more expensive. Again, not a smart system. Quite often, they end up putting off medical visits and dying. Susan Finley, a 53-year-old Walmart employee in Colorado, got pneumonia and took one day off of work beyond what Walmart's policy allows. So, of course, Walmart's gonna Walmart, which they did, by firing her. Without her job, she lost her nominal health care coverage, she struggled to find new work, and after avoiding a visit to the doctor for flu-like symptoms, she was found dead in her apartment. When Americans do manage to get treated, they frequently can't afford it. Simple, life-saving treatments can cost tens or hundreds of thousands of dollars, and if they don't have really good insurance, they're forced to take on medical debt. Tens of millions of Americans owe medical debt, often into the tens of thousands of dollars. Meanwhile, in a country like Britain or Norway, medical debt is almost unheard of. But hey, that's why GoFundMe is such a critical component of American healthcare. One in three GoFundMe campaigns is now for medical bills. I'll repeat that. One in three GoFundMe campaigns is now for medical bills. America is such a strong, powerful, rich, and great country that its citizens have to beg strangers on the internet for money so they can get life-saving treatments that are free in the rest of the developed world. But hey, that's just healthcare. Americans get terrible deals wherever you look. Let's take work, for example. Americans work longer hours than people in any other rich country in the world, and that's not because they enjoy sleep deprivation and not seeing their families for days at a time. It's because they don't want to starve, or freeze, or die. See, America has the least generous job support programs, the least generous family benefits, and the least generous unemployment benefits of any wealthy country. It's one of
Okay, some interesting things to think about, to discuss, because I feel that the things he said were accurate, but there's another side of the story. Let us have another discussion on a different day of all the things that we can say we have done, are doing, at least those people who are not a part of just going by the standards that we're told to. We're not on their grid. That's the story that we aren't hearing. We're going to say goodbye to our WBA audience, and remember, write down the numbers that I give you at the beginning of the show frequently, because you never know when you turn on the radio, I won't be there. So write down this number to go to our Listen Live every day, 717-734-6955, 717-734-6955. Now we're going to spend the rest of the hour with your calls. So let's now go to our calls and see your response to what we've been suggesting, telling, or sharing today. Always interested in your perspective. Let's say hello to Sonia from the Bronx. Hi, Sonia. Your turn.
Hi, Gary. Thank you for your wonderful work. I wanted to comment on the vaccines. I want to know why, yes, if these vaccines are so wonderful, why hasn't the FDA approved them yet? Why are they not approved except under emergency authorization use?
Simple, because the normal course for a vaccine requires anywhere from 5 to 7 years. They have to go through several stages of animal testing, and then they have to do various clinical studies. They have to review that with outside experts coming in to see, was the study done correctly? The methodology, was it a real placebo with a saline solution, or was it another vaccine? Because historically, in fact, it's in one of the articles I wrote about 10 years ago, I found that the placebo they were using was another vaccine. Well, that's a fraudulent study. It's a completely worthless study. You can't compare one vaccine with another vaccine if the whole point is one vaccine against a placebo, which means a non-vaccine. So that's why it takes 5 to 7 years. And you also have to engage what is called the precautionary principle, meaning first do no harm. Prove that the vaccine is safe, not just safe for the group that was in the experiment, but safe for people who would take it who were excluded from the experiment. And almost always they exclude pregnant women, senior citizens, people with compromised immune systems like cancer and arthritis, heart disease. But these are the very people who are being told, take the vaccine. And as a result, we've seen multiple people in Gibraltar and nursing homes, also in Norway. A large group of people in nursing homes got the vaccine and died. So then the cause of death was called COVID and not the underlying comorbidities and then taking in the vaccine. In point of fact, the FDA even released information showing that the number of people, percentage of people who died because of COVID by itself, 6%, 6 to 7%. That's it. That means 93 to 94% of the people who've died died because of the pre-existing comorbidities. In children, some 400 children have died, but they all had comorbidities like leukemia. Well, in the kids that were healthy, it was zero. So do you make a public mandate to get kids who are not vulnerable at all to take something where more of them will die because of the vaccine than the virus? With Anthony Fauci, these people clearly do not care. And that was the problem. Thank you for your question. I hope that answers it. Ron from New York, your final call, Ron. Make it quick, please.
Hi, good afternoon. This is Ron. And thank you again for everything that you have done throughout my life, that you have helped me revive myself and cure what doctors were telling me. I have an incurable disease known as multiple sclerosis. And I joined your running and walking club, and you really transformed my life. And I'm still to this day, 32 years later, I'm very happy and healthy, and I work out every day. And I want to thank you so much for your wisdom, and I appreciate everything that you've ever done. Thank you, Gary.
That's nice to hear, especially for other people in this audience who may be suffering from multiple sclerosis and be told there's nothing that can be done for it. And indeed, you're just one example. And I remember running with you in the park, Ron. Absolutely. Continue on. Everyone, thank you all for listening and have a nice day.